Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, the 13th.
Boom, boom, boom. Those are some really good sound effects right there.
We were prepared for that, right?
I should have been like, dun, dun, dun. That's better. Friday the 13th, everyone.
Yes. Lucky. What do you think of Friday the 13th? Do you fear it or...
I crave it because any kind of change in my luck is good for me.
Good or bad?
Good or bad will be exciting. It feels a little dangerous, a little scary. I like it.
Which people made it to be, you know, because there's nothing about it, I don't think, right? No. Do you know the source of this, the origin of how this thing started?
No.
No, I don't either.
Now I feel like a jerk.
I
don't either. But in some places, I'm sure it's a lucky number. I'm sure it's... But just 13 in America is not very lucky. There's not... Yeah. In hotels, they don't have a 13th floor a lot of the time.
Right, yeah.
But you do because it's 14th floor.
But the interesting thing is in Judaism, 13 is a good number.
Yeah, it doesn't
make
any sense.
Your bar mitzvah and everything, you know.
That makes no sense.
No sense at all.
But a black cat is either lucky or not lucky. A bird poops on you, it's good or bad.
Exactly. Yeah. And what about the people that win the lottery and stuff on Friday the 13th? You know, I mean, I'm sure... They don't fear that day, you know?
No.
So I'm sure a lot of people have a good day on Friday the 13th.
I'm planning on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I intend on doing that,
all right, you know? All right. We have the rain is over and the sun is out again.
Yes.
And that's nice. It was nice to get a little break with the rain, right?
Although LA shuts down in rain. It's bad.
Does.
Yes. They just don't know how to handle it. But it's lovely.
Like the news, it's like local news is like all storm watch, you know?
When the weathermen are like on a high. Yeah. Yes! I'm useful.
So happy birthday to you,
Thank
Tori.
You very
How
much.
Was your birthday yesterday?
Oh, it was great. I had a really good time. Yeah.
Did you guys go out and stuff?
We went to a really good dinner at Otis and Penelope. If anyone's gone, it's in West Hollywood. It was delicious. Probably the best meal I've had all year. It was delicious.
What kind of food is that?
It's a lot of meats. Mm-hmm. And I had a pasta, and my husband had a tri-tip. It was great.
So you went to a meat place. You didn't have meat, though?
I had pork belly ragu.
With the pasta.
Yeah, come on. I'm not an idiot. And I'm a bad Jew for getting the pork belly. But whatever.
There you go. But do you sometimes get cravings like for steak or meat?
I think, like I have a hard time understanding vegetarians. I like vegetarians usually. They're my type of people. They're usually liberal.
They have usually
open-minded. Yeah. But I think of the food chain and I don't get it. But hey, to each their own. I really respect that. Vegans, I'm like, oy vey with you.
Yeah,
oh
too
God,
much,
very
right?
Very hard.
Too much.
Good for them for believing in something so strictly, but I cannot do that.
Yeah, I know. But I have no problem eating animals, you know. I mean, obviously the ones that we tend to eat, I don't eat unusual ones.
Right.
But at the same time... It's good. I mean, I don't understand people that don't want... I mean, we are carnivores, right?
Right. And I get it. I get it. I love animals.
Yeah.
But I also love pork belly. I gotta be honest. I do. I like both.
I know. I was raised on meat, so I like
too.
That. Most people like meat, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not that many...
Well, in LA, it's like vegan here, vegan there. But I don't think in the rest of the country
it's it's a trend.
Yeah. It's very trendy.
LA, everything's trendy.
Everything
Somehow
is trendy.
The trend of sushi just stuck, though.
Yeah.
And it's not going anywhere.
Well, I just read something that there's a tapeworm and some salmon.
Really?
From U.S. salmon. So everyone look that up and be careful with some raw fish. I just saw it in a posting about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Terrible.
It used to be only in Asia, this certain tapeworm. Yeah. They found it
and now
in
it's
U.S.
Here,
salmon.
Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's just what we need.
God, tapeworm. Oh.
We don't have enough shit.
God, we have
it is.
Tapeworm Let's sounds so more. Scary. Oh, my God. Ugh.
I know, man. So, there's a lot of... a lot of stuff going on. We do have a great guest in the studio. We'll get to him in just a minute. Tori, I think we're going to have an incredible story here. You think we've heard some stories?
Yeah.
I think we have a story here.
I think so.
So we hit the potluck today, Radio Gold.
Yes.
And we'll bring him in just a minute. So that was it? Did you get a lot of calls from your family and stuff? Or,
I got calls. I got some nice presents. I got my... and then tomorrow is the big party for the 1982 1982 party. So you have to come dressed as something from 1982.
Oh, nice.
So I think I'm going to come as one of the shower scenes from Porky's and just be in a towel. Because that's super
people would like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking about people wearing costumes because that's what they want to do in real life.
Yeah.
Obviously, you want to get naked in front of people.
Well, I'd like to be comfortable. I'd rather not have to wear Spanx. So that it seems like a good plan for me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, take pictures.
I will. There'll be a lot of pictures. It'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be good.
Will people know? Maybe you should put like a shower head over you or something.
I think people know. I think I'm going to have like wet hair.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I think I'm going to be like from the shower.
And people will know?
I will tell people.
Yeah.
I will inform them. But it's a funny, it's a very famous scene with Porky's, right?
Oh, I don't remember
that.
It's
a guy, it's a bunch of guys, and yeah. I think it's in high school, and they have a wall into the women's locker room, right?
Oh,
he
and
knows.
And he peeked,
someone makes a peephole. It's a very famous thing.
Yeah.
And you look through and you see all these women in their towels, and I think men everywhere masturbated together to this.
Whoa.
Not together
possibly,
as one,
yeah.
But yes, they were united.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, sounds good to me. You know, I mean, I'll have to check it out
and check out shower scene from Porky.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
I don't think I would masturbate to something like that, you know.
Back then, it was very sexy.
Yeah, right?
There was a towel.
That had to be like 1981, 82,
82,
right?
Yeah, 82, that's why. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that. But I remember that because it was one of the first movies on video.
VHS.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Actually, there wasn't even VHS. It was Betamax first. Sony came out with it first. The tapes were smaller. And then JVC came out with VHS, which was longer. So that's why the industry adopted that, because it could hold entire movies, whereas Betamax couldn't.
And then just like my father, you get an entire Laserdisc player, and
that
really runs out.
I know.
We spent all the money on a Laserdisc player. It's the new thing, Tori, is it?
Right. Lasted exactly a second, right?
Less than a second. Not only that, we're in the middle of watching a movie. You got to get up and flip the fucking thing in the middle of the movie. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And he reorganized the whole entertainment center.
Oy. Yeah. I'm telling you, the young generations are so spoiled now.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to have it really hard.
Yeah. We had to walk over and turn over the laser disc.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Even saying the word laser disc, just you're a loser automatically.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not a good showing.
I know. There's a terrible story here about a mother that kept her boy locked in the bathroom. Did you hear about that one? The boy is now 12. She kept him in a bathroom, dark bathroom. The toilet full of feces and everything, no water, no nothing. She wouldn't let him out.
For how
and
long?
He was malnourished for a year.
Oh,
they found him 30 pounds. He's 30 pounds. Severely malnourished. You look at his mother and you go, someone like that should not have a child.
No.
You know?
It's terrible.
And how can it, I mean, a mother, you know, you can understand anybody else, okay? People are crazy.
Mothers are
mother,
crazy. There's some crazy mothers out there.
That's true, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, but imagine starting your life like that.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Well, my wishes go out to that kid.
I know. I had to bring it up because it's like so shocking, but let's go to lighter things and stuff. This was interesting to me, so I wanted to bring this up. There's a smart billboard in Stockholm.
Oh, cool.
And
I
what happens
Stockholm.
Is, what happens is if you smoke a cigarette next to it, it starts to cough. So there's a picture of a man coughing on there.
He'll cough there, when you stand. So wait, so it only works if you stand specifically next to this one.
Next to it, and it's not a tall one.
Oh,
it's
I
like,
see.
Yeah,
I
it's
see.
Like a bus stop or
Very
something.
Very clever.
Right?
We're talking about it.
Yeah.
We're like, talking about it.
Yeah, and plus you'd go there, you'd smoke, suddenly you hear it. You hear a
it's
cough.
It's embarrassing, like, right?
Right?
That's good. As a smoker, does it make you want
to
quit?
You. No.
Okay.
But shortness of breath makes me want to quit. Yeah. Yeah. That does happen when you smoke cigarettes. So,
yes, it does.
Yeah. But
so when you go up a flight of stairs instead of being normal, you're getting this excess.
No, I
shortness.
Don't. I don't. I got to tell you, I do those four floors. I huff and puff less than other people that don't smoke.
Wow.
I don't know how that is. I mean, I don't really work out or anything.
Right. When do you feel the huff and the shortness of breath?
I don't know. Sometimes sleeping
or
something like that. You know, I think I have like a sleep apnea or something.
Yeah,
you know?
My dad has to wear the Hannibal Lecter.
I know.
Mask.
God, I don't want to have to
well,
do that.
Oh, it was. Man.
I know.
Scary.
Then I better quit, right?
You
if
should.
I don't want to wear.
Because I had a
like
nightmare
that.
And ran in to tell my dad, and he woke up like, "What's wrong?"
Wow.
And I was like, "Ah!" It was terrible.
Oh, God, who wants that?
Well, he does every night, man. He's got to push the tongue down and everything.
Wow.
Do you snore? He snores.
I snore.
That's why you
got to
do this.
I think because the tongue falls back.
That's what they do. Push
throat,
the air
right?
down.
Yeah.
Got the mask, man.
Yeah, I know. But what I do is, for those of you who are wondering if you have this problem. Like I have like sinus problem. I have like a deviated septum.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to breathe through my nose. So what happens is I breathe through my mouth when
very
I
dangerous.
Sleep. And that's what causes the snoring. So I put like those straps you
he
put
did
on
that
your
too.
Nose.
Nose
now.
Breathe. Yeah.
It's amazing.
So,
it's amazing.
See,
it opens up. Really. It opens your nostrils really wide
wow.
without any medication.
Yeah, the little strips.
The yeah.
I just think they
like
take blackheads
down.
Off if you rip them off. I think they do. Biore should get
maybe,
on that.
Maybe, yeah. Oh, that's gross.
That's really... No, I love those things.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Blackheads?
Girl, no, when you get the little... You know, women get the little mask on their nose.
Right.
Right? You know what I'm talking
right,
about.
Right, right.
And you rip them off.
You rip them
and you
off.
Can see them.
Oh, wow. How disgusting.
Yeah, wow. That
man.
Was gross. Okay.
Okay,
we
well,
ended
I'm
going to
switch
note.
Gears
Sorry.
Here. We're going to get to our guest right now.
Yay!
And we have USRA racing champion Justin Peck.
Woo!
Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you
thank
for, having
you for
me.
Joining us. So you're known as Justin Peck, number 49.
Yeah.
Now, 49 is the name of your car, the number of your car, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So you're a race car driver. Tell us what kind of driving you do.
So I race in the Lucas Oil Off-Road Series, so it's a pro truck. So I'm that guy that takes the trucks that will go 145 miles an hour, will jump 200 feet.
Wow.
Wow.
Bang,
you've got a large penis.
Bang.
This guy's got the balls.
No, I'm hung like a fruit bat.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Right there.
That's okay, but you get your manliness somewhere
seriously,
else.
Man. Yes, yeah, very manly.
Yeah, exactly. I have a big truck back home. I'm just saying. I fall out of it. It's funny.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Is it the ones with the enormous tires?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you got to check them out, folks. Check out Justin while we're talking to him at justinpeck.com, P-E-C-K. And you also came out with a book, which we're going to talk about and everything. But I've never been, I never actually watched this kind of sport. So tell us a little bit about it. I mean, how did you get into it, first of all?
I've been racing for 23 years.
Really?
Yeah, I've been doing it a long time. So,
but how did you first get into it? I mean, what like made you say, I need to get
fast.
Into a truck and go really,
really,
fast,
really fast
and 200 feet in the air?
Well, when I was like super young, I mean, I was always a car kid.
Really?
You know, had the stompers. I'm dating myself
yeah, you are.
Right now. Stompers, right?
So you're like the Legos.
That's okay. I'm still the oldest one in every room, so don't worry.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, it was always that adrenaline thing for me. And so when I got older, it was, you got a dirt bike. That's just what you did.
Yeah,
so we got the dirt bike. I started that. So I raced professionally for about 14 years.
Wow.
And
where did you grow up, Justin?
Utah.
Utah.
Yeah.
That's where you have dirt bikes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's like a place for dirt bikes.
I'm trying to leave that
we're
place.
We're in a big place, small town.
So it's Salt Lake City.
Oh, Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
What's it like living there? I mean, people say it's beautiful. Have you been, Tori?
I have, and it's a lot of Mormons, but it's also, it's very beautiful.
Yeah. Go on. Are you
a
Mormon?
Yeah, what do you feel?
Yeah.
My feelings right now are probably, it's Friday the 13th, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about tapeworms, masturbation, and other things.
Exactly.
Ago,
talk about Salt Lake City.
Okay. So anyway, moving on.
Got it.
Cool. So do you have any siblings?
I have two brothers, not to get on the downer note, but one of my youngest brother, he overdosed about 9 years ago.
Wow.
Off of heroin and died right before his 21st birthday.
Oh, God.
And then my second brother, I think it's been 6 years now. We were out playing in the desert just on a dirt bike. He crashed, broke his C4 level in his neck, and now is a quadriplegic.
Oh, my
God. So,
wow. My poor mother. That's all I can say.
Now, let me ask you one thing. Are you continuing to race now?
Oh, hell
after
yes,
all this?
Man. Yeah, I will.
Wow.
I will
You'll never stop.
Really?
Well, and I haven't.
So it's in your blood, right? Even thinking of your mom and everything, you're like, listen, I still have to do this.
Yeah, my poor mother. Well, I have an 11-year-old son that races, too.
Wow.
So,
really?
Yeah, so we're we're starting generations.
Yeah. So what's that need for speed thing? Where do you think it comes from?
You know, honestly, I'm sure we'll talk about this here in a little bit, but for me, it's a little bit of the mental health type thing. So,
mm-hmm.
So when I put on my helmet, it honestly is the only time that I can actually focus mm-hmm. in life. Mm-hmm. People have this concept that you get in a race car, right? Uh-huh. And it's like a shit show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, things are going everywhere and it's complete chaos.
Uh-huh.
For me, it's not.
Really?
It's just, it's amazing. It's
like
peace.
Your sacred
it's,
space.
It's my sacred space.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like your church.
Yeah.
Your synagogue. That's so interesting. Like when I get on stage and do comedy and do stand up, everyone's like, why would you do that? And I'm like, because I feel really good when I'm up there.
Exactly.
That's my sacred space.
That's true, right? Yeah. I mean, it puts you in a rush. And
yeah,
stuff,
each
you know?
Person is their own sacred. Some people can have tea and read a book, and that's their sacred space. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah, but, for yeah. sure. And that's what I do. I read, but also being here. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. This is
you feel like
space.
In your element, you know? You feel like this is where I feel good.
Psychologists call it the flow. And
that's
when you're
true,
in the
right?
flow, it's yeah. you should continue doing much more of that.
Yeah, it's sort yeah. of like a mental orgasm every day,
okay,
you know?
Yeah, or
yeah,
that.
Something like that.
We can go there.
We figured we'll go everywhere today.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
here,
I'm,
right?
Yeah,
we already ruined your interview
right
anyway.
I'm loving this show right now.
Mental orgasm. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Interesting.
What's your favorite thing to race? Is it the trucks? Is it bikes? Is it... What's your favorite thing if you had your choice?
It's absolutely the trucks right now.
Okay,
I mean, it's... people ask what it's like, and I explain to them it's like having a shotgun fight in a closet. So
wow.
it's complete Whoa. Chaos nonstop.
Wow.
I mean, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. Big adrenaline, big speed. So.
Wow. You see, I'm looking at the book here. By the way, folks, the reason Justin is here mainly is to promote the new book, Bulletproof. And we'll find out why it's called that way. Justin, very handsome man. Obviously, a big story to tell that it fills a book,
yeah,
and a very unique life. I mean, I would imagine someone like you. You're not going to have like a 9-to-5 job. You're not going to like sit in an office. That's not you.
No, I actually started my own company when I was 17. Mm. So, my dad was a truck driver growing up. My mom, you know, she had to work at a steel mill. We didn't have much money, mm-hmm. which was fine. I mean, back then you didn't know. I mean,
you had outside.
Yeah. I mean, we had outside. We had play.
Utah,
it's,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Saturday, you take your shirt off and you run around and, you know, you go get banged up.
That's
but,
what I did. Exactly. No,
visual. Anyway, so, it's, you know, growing up was growing up. And so my dad did make a comment to me. At one point in my life, he said, you know what, out of all the kids, you're the one that has the possibilities of being successful.
Wow.
Right.
And so I had the drive. And so 17, it was actually 18, sorry. 17, I got married. Another Utah thing.
Wow.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, I only have 4 children. I don't have the 12.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Typical,
right.
So.
You usually
so you manage to keep your head on your shoulders and not get
good. And only one wife at a time.
Well, good for you, sir.
Yeah. One of the few.
That's a Utah hero.
Yes, right there. I'm living in that biodome bubble right now.
Right.
So, what were we talking about?
Oh, you're 18.
You're
18. Yeah. So
you got married.
Yeah, so I started my own company then. And I just realized that I was better off doing my own thing, you know? And so, so I did a company for a little bit, that one kind of crashed and burned. Great education.
Yeah, why
you
not?
Know? Yeah, I mean, it was great education for me. I barely graduated high school, right?
School was not your
barely,
thing.
No, yeah. School was not my thing.
I could see that.
All. I mean, I was...
You were like restless and stuff all the time, right? I mean, well, you need to move, right?
Yeah, well, very socially awkward. I mean, mostly just kind of based off of the disorder, the bipolar stuff. So,
right.
But...
Let's dive into that. I want to hear
all
about
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
When did you...
Well, but let him just
okay,
finish
sorry,
this.
Okay, sorry. I really want to hear about that. Go
ahead.
But,
right, which one?
No, the one where you were in school, it was hard and hard to live with bipolar and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, well, okay. So he's stopping at that point. Let's go to the bipolar then.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
so confused right now.
I know. That's fine. That's what the show's about, to make your head spin.
Yes.
But no, this is we were just talking about that yesterday because I do also have bipolar disorder. So if you mention this is, I guess, something that we need to get into. So... You knew early on that you had this?
Well, so I realized at roughly 26 or 27 years old that my first manic phase was when I was 13. Mm-hmm. And I remember that day, like I remember that episode. It's like burned into my brain. And so...
Wow. What was it?
It was just, I mean, it was a crazy experience, right? So I'm supposed to be home babysitting my younger brothers. And for some reason, I had this energy that just went crazy. So I'm burning around the house and, you know, jumping off the back roof and, like, wow. you know, just having, for me, I was having fun. And my brothers, they knew that their older brother was losing his shit right then.
So, freak it out.
Yeah, so they called mom. They were off doing their thing, and it was a Friday night, a date night for them. And they ended up calling my grandpa to come over to check on me. He comes over, and I mean, he's complete old school, right? So he comes over and, you know, grabs the belt, and he's like, "What are you doing?"
Oh, wow.
So they were absolutely like 100% positive I was on drugs at 13.
Wow.
And I wasn't.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The side part to that is, so that lasted about 2 days of that feeling, and it was amazing. Mm. So when you go to school at as a 13-year-old kid, and your parents can't even handle you,
yeah.
imagine what your peers are going to do, mm-hmm. right? So your peers, you know, they're looking at me like, what the hell? Like, you know, we can't wow. handle this guy.
Right.
Well, then after that, 2 days, 3 days after that, I had to fake sick because I didn't want to get out of bed.
Wow.
And so it was that, it
the
started
crash.
That
the
way.
Down.
It
crash.
Was the crash.
Wow.
Life has a way of balancing itself
yeah, it
out.
Does.
So
yeah.
Right,
wow.
right. So, and that's the thing. I mean, and people have to understand, you have this, and life is up and down like a roller coaster. You don't know what the next minute's going to bring, right?
Exactly.
And so you become unpredictable, and it's scary to you and to people.
Do you guys have gray, like, you know, you're saying it's all black or white, right? It's like manic or down. Do you guys ever feel like you're in the gray where it's just in the middle?
Well, with medication.
With medication.
Yeah, well, see, and I, for me, when we're in those phases, at least for me,
right.
I don't know that I'm in them.
Oh, wow.
And so what's the level? I mean, people always tell me you need to find balance.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is balance?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Like what does that mean?
Yeah,
your high is maybe my low,
exactly.
you know? And so
that's true.
So
right?
when I'm in a manic phase, I don't know. Like as I'm sitting right here right now,
right.
I feel like I'm talking fast and I
right,
feel like
you're,
having
oh, you're,
fun,
I think you're so
but
chill.
But yeah, you're energized
yeah.
and everything, but you're not. I can tell you right now, you're not bouncing off the walls, and that's important.
Yeah,
but you're holding
minutes.
Yourself.
He's
holding himself.
I can tell. That's, how
that's
I
okay. You can bounce on the chair. That's
I do
fine.
That too. They give kids like this a lot of in my school. They're giving kids pedals. So kids who have that restless energy when they're sitting there, they aren't a bubble ball and they have pedals.
What
so they
a
at
great
least
idea,
can get,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Get
at least
the
they can get the energy out.
Yeah.
Well, it's the outside stimulation
sure.
that really, really, really helps. I mean, even writing this book, so I've only read 2 books in my life.
Whoa.
I don't have, like I can't understand and focus that much. And so when I was in junior high, I read a book because I had to. And the second book that I read was mine.
Wow.
Because I had to read my book,
wow.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it took me 10 years to write this
wow.
thing. And what I found is when I was writing it, I had to have headphones on that was playing my music. Mm. I had to have the TV on for visual stimulation. And then I had to have something else going on just to even focus to
wow.
write my thoughts.
Wow.
It's crazy what works.
Yeah.
You found
yeah.
what works for
yeah.
you. I also tend to do the crossword puzzle while listening to an audiobook and watching TV.
Because
yeah. I need that amount of stimulation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot to do.
I'm very bored.
Yeah.
I really can't focus.
Wow,
exactly.
So you need a lot of stimulation.
I do, and my grandfather did, and like so. It's interesting but you find what you're good at. You find where you can make it work. Some people need quiet. Some people need stimulation.
Yes. Yeah, and exactly. And what I say is, if you have that energy, utilize it.
Heck yeah.
to succeed.
Like, look
know?
At this guy making at 18, and then writing
yeah.
a book, and like that's amazing.
I know. So, what was the reason you married so young? Was it like pressure from the family?
I think it's probably because the condom broke. So.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Oh, did you
okay.
See that one? I don't know.
The truth
yeah,
comes
yeah,
out.
No, let's just say that we had a baby at 18. So,
we got married.
So, yeah.
So you did.
But she is like, you know, she was my best friend. I'm not married to her anymore. I'm a solo guy now. But she is an incredible mother.
Wow.
I have some amazing
nice.
Respect for
Are
her.
Are you guys so. Still friendly?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm still
yeah.
friendly.
If
yeah.
he's able to say that about her,
yeah.
they
but
would
sometimes
be friendly.
Have a space away from each other, but yeah, they seem to be very amicable.
Yeah,
that's great.
That's good. That's very important, I think. You know, otherwise the kids are totally screwed up, you know.
I agree.
How many years were you married before you separated?
Here we go. The first time I was married, mm-hmm. it was, we were married for 14 years.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Had 4 kids. And then I went on a little small sabbatical and then got married again, which was... Well, I'm finding that the second marriage is always a mistake.
Mm.
So
Maybe the third. Have you done the third?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why is it a mistake?
Well, my second one was a nightmare.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but you said it's sort of like generalizing. I mean, do you think it is for everybody? Did you find sort of like a rule or?
I mean, this is kind of probably a crazy belief of mine, but you uh-huh. always see that the first time you marry for love.
For love.
Right? The second time you marry for fun. Uh-huh. And then the third time you pull your head out of your ass and find someone that's
that will take care of you when you're old, right?
Take care of you when you're old.
Yeah. Like, your ass. That's true. Right. There you go.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a good, just take, it takes three. It takes three. Yeah.
Three marriages you're to get good. To the right place, right?
Third is the charm.
It's called the Goldilocks theme theory.
So remember, if you're gonna divorce, you have to weather the second one to get to the third
but
one.
But you'll have fun on the second one.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
as long as you can stay in the second one long enough where there can be an annulment, then you're good. As long as it's either, you know, you have a prenup or an annulment agreement, you're good.
Yeah, right.
You're good to go.
Wow.
So funny.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Justin Peck. He's an off-road racer, entrepreneur, speaker, author, mental health advocate, and we haven't even started talking to him yet. Already half the show is over. Yeah. So, but we still have a lot of time. We're going to cover a lot of stuff. But off-road racer, so... I mean, so you said your dad had a truck and everything. You probably as soon as you were able to drive, you got on that thing and you said, I got to get a fast truck, right?
Yeah, I was driving at a really, really young age.
Really?
And, yeah, me and Pops, we would, we were dirt bike guys and, stuff like that.
Yeah, wow, so cool.
Our dirt bike, I'm so lame. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I'm a real annoying person. Our I'm not a country person, so I don't know. Are dirt bikes motors or just like mountain bikes?
Wait a minute. Do I look like a country guy?
No, not at all, actually.
Saying, like,
that's true. Okay. Salt Lake City is very cosmopolitan. Like, that's a city. Yeah. But I don't know what a dirt bike is. It with motoring or is it just
a motorcycle?
Mountain bike?
Yeah, it's a motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
A motorcycle on dirt. Do you know what Supercross is?
Yeah.
All right.
She's not sure.
Is it a motorcycle?
It's a motorcycle.
Yeah. Like they have a huge event in Anaheim.
I know it's very big. The whole world of motorcycling is huge.
Yeah. So it's the guys that you're burning around the track with 20 other goofballs.
Got it. I've seen those.
So I do that in a truck.
Okay.
Though. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah.
You crazy.
You're very crazy. Right. But at least in the truck, it's probably safer than on the bike. Obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. In the 14 years that I raced dirt bikes, I've broken 78 bones, 19 surgeries, 12 plates, 300 screws, 4 rods. I've got cadaver parts.
Oh my 68, God!
68 ounces of titanium.
Are you weakened to burning?
He's a bionic woman. A bionic man.
Yeah. And you what? And you flat life?
Physically died twice.
What?
I want to hear about the cadaver part. What part is cadaver?
Yeah, right here. So it's
right
my,
on.
Yeah. So it's my heel bone, right? So I completely severed my tricep in a crash.
Right.
And they had to put a heel bone and an Achilles tendon from a cadaver to graft my tricep back.
Wow. Dude.
It was the second time it had ever been performed in the United States when I did it back in 2000. So it was rad.
And you still move like a normal, healthy person, right?
Yeah,
I mean, despite all that.
Here again, that's all perception, man.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You feel
really?
Like you walk.
No, I mean, and you walked in and you seemed okay. I would never suspect you've had all these accidents.
No, it's when it's cold outside, I ache. But the thing is like I've been doing this for so long. It's one of those things, one of those things. I had back surgery a year ago. Had my back fused.
My dad did too.
Had 4 levels fused in December. I was back in a race car in January. So
you crazy.
Again, clinical.
Your mom is like, I feel so bad for your mother.
I know, right?
Dying. If my son, no mercy on my mom. So when you have a crash and there's a broken bone, is it just get back on as soon as possible? That's just that's the feeling. There's never a time where you're like, maybe I should stop.
Well, the only time, honestly, is when I broke the elbow, like when I completely destroyed that. That was... I actually ran over to the bike to pick it back up. And picking up the bike, that's when I felt like the tricep completely severed.
Yeah.
So
Did you have to ask that question?
Yeah.
I don't need to know the details.
Well, but the only other time that I haven't got back on the bike is when I crashed and broke both of my collarbones at the same time.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, that leaves you kind of incapacitated.
Yeah, you're done. Yeah. How do you crash a truck in terms of, I know I get Supercross, but how do you, does the truck flip over?
It flies in the air.
But I mean, does it go?
You flip it over too?
Well, we have a tendency of rolling these things. Wow. So we did a race, Las Vegas to Reno this year in 2016. And it was, we were winning. We had a huge lead. We were at mile 132 out of like 690. Mile 132 going down this gravel road at 145 miles an hour. and I just missed the turn and went off. We rolled the truck 13 times. From where we went off the track to where we landed was 650 feet. Looked like an atom bomb went off.
Yeah.
And the only thing I broke was my arm. So,
wow.
Was
wow.
So, yeah, I mean,
you just. So, you have your, a guardian yeah. angel or two, at least one you've
yeah,
got.
Yeah, at least one. And I mean, yeah. if you look at my pictures, the tattoos uh-huh. on my back.
Yes.
Yeah, it's my guardian angel.
So, yeah, really? What do the tattoos mean? Right, I'm looking at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, look at his back beautiful. Tattoo right here. Oh, he's full of tattoos. Amazing. I mean, not just sleeves. We're talking the whole body.
And they're yeah. this beautiful shaded like skulls. And yeah. tell me what that's about.
So I started with the first two on my forearms.
Yeah.
And it's
beautiful
kinda,
shading.
Yeah,
I love that.
It kind of references bipolar. There's a crazy side. There's a non-crazy side. And if you put them together, there's the balance in the middle.
Wow. They're so. Making. So we put his arms together and they make another tattoo. That's yeah, incredible. Wow.
That's the visual part of
wow,
of
radio.
Right there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, if you hold it close to the mic, maybe they'll
see it.
It.
Yes, yes. yes.
Yeah. Wow. Justin Peck, folks, an off-road racer, and he'll race until he can't race anymore.
Exactly.
So death doesn't scare you, right? I mean, you don't mind, but doesn't being quadriplegic
yeah.
doesn't that scare you?
You know, it doesn't, and. I don't know. For me, as many crashes as I've been in and as many broken bones, I don't have having the mental illness, going kind of back to that just a little bit, I don't assess risk like the normal person.
Yeah.
That's true, huh?
A consequence to me, just I don't understand the consequence end of things.
And you never have, really?
No, I never have. Oh. You know, I mean, but, you know, when I was 12, 13 years old, we'd go to scout camp, and they'd have these huge cliffs, and people were like, I'm not jumping off of that. And they'd always look at me,
yeah.
and they'd go, Justin will do it. And
yeah, you're that kid.
Yeah, and I'm bombing off the
He's
cliff.
He's already gone off.
Yeah.
So fear of death, fear of consequence, fear of risk, I don't know what that means.
Right.
So.
Wow. Well, that's why there's daredevils like you. I mean, I can't imagine, a reasonable person doing this.
Yeah,
I would never do this.
That.
I mean, I'm afraid of getting on a motorcycle on the street because it's just too dangerous. I mean, did you ever get... Well, yeah, you did get in trouble because not understanding the consequences many times.
Yes. Did you ever get... When did the book start? When did the idea of the book start?
So, like I said, my brother, my youngest brother, he overdosed, right? So it was
How
about,
old were you then?
10 years ago. So what, I'm like 72, right? I'm just joking.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
He looks 29.
Yeah.
He looks
he's 29. 20, he's actually 32.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, it was 10 years ago. So I was... 33-ish, roughly.
Yeah. And he was 19?
He was 20.
He was 20.
Yeah. So he passes away, laying in bed one time, and just realized that, you know, I had no written account of my life. And I have children. And so I wanted to start writing them something that as they got older, that they could read about how their
Almost
daddy
like a
was.
Legacy.
Yeah, kind of legacy thing. Yeah. Because honestly, if you think about it, when you're a young kid, you know, 12, 14, 16 years old, your parents are just your parents.
Yeah.
You have no idea of their struggles that they go through because at that age, we can't comprehend that. And so I figured if I could write it down and explain it to them, then when they became my age, they could read it and go, oh, I get that. Like, I get why he was doing what he was doing.
Right. So you tell your story to your kids mainly.
Yes.
And then you document your life, and then you go, well, I'll put it in a book.
Well, it was kind of crazy how it worked out, because one chapter turned into two chapters, and then it turned into four.
Was
and then
it easy to write?
Like, no, it was the worst thing ever.
Some people, it just comes
but
out.
But that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, but you wanted it badly enough that you did it.
Yeah, 2 years ago is kind of when I finished it and got 38 chapters down, and I handed it to an editor just because I wanted to make sure that it didn't sound too goofy.
Right.
And when I got it back from the editor, she's like, "Oh my God, like this is crazy!"
Right.
And so she sends it to another editor, and both of them say, "Look, you need to publish this."
Right.
And for me, it's just a normal book, right?
Like, right.
It's just me. It's nothing like nothing crazy, but
right.
But what I'm finding as time goes on. People reading it, and there's now a purpose behind it. It's bringing that awareness to mental health.
There you go, and to everything else. You know, I mean, the thing is that you're such a layered, deep person. You know, there's so many layers to you. But I want to know why you call this bulletproof. the book by Justin Peck, a memoir, Bulletproof. And you can go to the website, justinpeck.com. You can also go to, and there's a lot about the book. You can check it out. I see you have it soft cover, download, hardcover. So any form you want, that's what you can get. But before we go on, how can people find you, Justin? Social media, things like that?
Yeah, JustinPeck49 is most of my social media handles. I guess that's
yeah, it's called a handle.
Yeah, yeah.
Flame.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. The thing is like social media, I try to keep up with it. Yeah,
right.
I can't see you liking that.
Everybody tries to, and it's hard because it requires a lot of time.
Well, I think my biggest complaint about it is social media. Your life in social media isn't your life in normal life.
It's all your wins. Right? It's all your wins.
Yeah, it's all like, I have 9,000 friends. No, you don't.
Yeah,
like,
they're not friends, really.
You have two people that you hang out with.
And exactly. I don't necessarily post on Facebook. If I'm having a bad hair day and feel super fat and didn't get a job on an audition, I'm not going to post it. I will post it. Right. When I'm looking thin, and I, you know, so you never see losers. Right. You only see the wins.
Yeah. Right. So it's all an illusion, you know?
Yeah.
Just like in the movies, everybody looks beautiful and everything. Even the characters that are supposed to look ugly are beautiful in the movies. And because it's not real life, you know? So Bulletproof, tell us, how do you get that name? What does it mean?
All right, you guys ready for a ride?
We're ready for a ride. All right.
So there was one point in my life, it was 10, 15 years ago, something I don't even remember anymore, that I was going through kind of the depressive state of the disorder and was having issues and was trying to get out of bed, was trying to focus, was trying to work and do the things that I was supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been really, really good at hiding the disorder. So no one knew. So I would always, tell my wife, it's like, I'm sick today. Well, that sickness would turn into a month and then 2 months. And then she'd finally realize, all right, he's just being damn ass lazy. So get out of the house.
Yeah, yeah. So this would last months.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I have class one disorder. So it goes, so it's the long distance one.
Is class one the highest level? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so not cool.
Yeah,
so,
right. Bad.
No, actually, like I feel like I'm really, really blessed.
Oh, wow.
You are. I mean, you're very blessed. Yeah. You know, I think everything that we have in our life that's difficult is really a challenge for us. I mean, the thing is, and that's your challenge. So when you were born, somebody put obstacles in your way and said, you have to get over them.
Yes.
And it's not just you, it's everybody, you know? And in fact, I tend to think maybe as a soul, we choose what we want to come as, you know, to create our own challenges so we can rise above ourselves, stretch ourselves a little farther, you know. So you were given this. I mean, that's a big challenge, having bipolar, you know. Mine is a little different. I don't have my manic episodes is not so much like the grandiose and everything, although that does happen to me. But with me, it's more irritability and anger and things like that. You know, you just like want to punch holes in the wall, right?
Yes.
You want to break things like that, you know.
Wow.
And it switches back to depression, back to this, because then you're ashamed of the way you're behaving.
Wow.
So you get depressed about that. And, you know, and you go, how can someone like me behave like this? And you have no control. So eventually you realize. So let me ask you this before we get to the bullet. So you must be on medication, right? I mean, you can't possibly live a normal life without some kind of control over it.
Yes. Yes.
Good.
Yeah, the answer is yes. The thing is with the disorder, what I've found is that one type of medication will only work for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So you know, I've taken everything that you can
everything,
possibly
right?
think of.
Right.
Yeah, well, I've taken everything prescribed and then, you know, non-prescribed.
Not prescribed. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's
self-medicate.
Yeah, we self-medicate sometimes.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
It's a statistic. So yeah, I take a bunch. You know, we had to switch meds up even like 8 months ago.
Mm.
And so we just have to find the things.
So it's constantly you have to monitor this.
Yeah, it doesn't go away.
Right.
Yeah,
it just doesn't go away. You know, I'm actually fortunate in that. I mean, it did take a long time for me to be diagnosed as bipolar. But after I did and found the right doctor, I received a cocktail of three different medication that I've been taking for 15, 20 years. And it's working like a charm.
Wow.
So I'm lucky in that way.
Good for
you,
man.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you try to get off it, you remember where you came from.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll go right back into it.
It's very familiar.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like you get back into that depression. You go, oh my God, I forgot I was ever in that place because now my life is so normal.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know. So, well, it's nice to see you smiling and confident and still full of energy and everything. So let's friggin' hear about the bullet.
I want to hear about the bullet.
Okay. All right. So we're ready for the ride.
Yeah. So
you're trying to get out of bed. Your wife thinks you're lazy.
Yeah. So it was one morning. I'm like, all right, you know, it's time to go. And so I opened my eyes in the morning. You know, I leaned over. I kissed my wife, and then walked upstairs, kissed my kids goodbye and stuff. And it was early. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning, so everybody's asleep. I go out back, grab my dog, throw my dog in my truck, and, you know, I've been a construction guy all my life, and so, you know, going out checking on job sites. So I found myself at a top of a canyon that I'd been to so many times before. I mean, it was the place where I could unplug. No cell phone service, nothing. So I let the dog out of the back of the truck. She's running around. She's happy. And I'm sitting in the truck just having kind of one of those little breakdown moments. You know, you'll hear the music come on. You're like, oh, my God, this song
it's
is
for
killing
me. Yeah.
Now, right?
Whoa. Yeah.
And so, you know, I started writing some stuff down in a notebook, which I typically don't do. I mean, that wasn't my thing. But it was nothing I had no intentions of anything. And for just a brief second, it was like it's kind of surreal, but for just a brief second, I gave up. And I reached over and grabbed the pistol that was sitting next to me. I loaded it. I put it to my head, and I pulled the trigger.
What?
Wow. And now, what was the pistol doing there? Did you take it with you?
They always have pistols.
Yeah.
There's always pistols in Utah.
Yeah, in Utah.
Okay. Yeah, in Utah. You got to just imagine that.
All right. That explains it. Wow. So you shot yourself in the head.
Well, it didn't.
And it didn't go off, though.
Yeah. It didn't go off. Oh. That's where the crazy thing happens, right?
Wow.
So I pull it, and I'm ready for it. And it just goes click. And so, you know, for me, I'm like, how the hell do I screw this up?
Right.
That's impossible. So I unchamber the bullet, right? The bullet falls out onto the ground. And so I reach down and I pick the bullet up. And you can see where the firing pin had hit the bullet. So I still have the bullet to this day.
No, of course you do.
Yeah, so it was crazy.
So it hit the bullet, but the bullet didn't fire.
Is there any reason or just jammed?
We
don't know. Guardian angel.
It's the guardian angel.
It wasn't your time.
Yeah.
And also not to go like that. I mean, imagine how terrible it is to go like that, right? Yeah. I mean, do you really, when you're like healthy and you're okay, think about it. Is this the way you really want to leave?
No.
Your legacy? No.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
But the issue is the disorder sometimes, you have irrational thinking. We don't think like you're supposed to think. On a normal day-to-day level, I mean, you know, that committing suicide is the farthest thing from my mind.
Right.
But when you're in a different state, when the chemicals aren't firing correctly, then you don't have the rational thinking.
And it's sort of an impulsive thing.
Very impulsive.
Yeah, it feels like it was impulsive. You just grabbed it and did it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what the fuck?
What the hell? Just do it. Right.
No, I totally can relate to that, you know, because, I mean, I felt, and especially in the depression part, right? It's such a deep depression that you just say, and yesterday I was explaining this also, is that I discovered bipolar is probably the most predisposed to suicide.
Yes.
Because depression alone, you're even too depressed to try to kill yourself.
Yeah.
With bipolar, you still have the energy to kill yourself, you know, and to think, God damn it, you know, I don't want to do this. But you also probably felt like, because the depression usually, or I think the suicide attempt at least, comes from feeling that you're letting everybody down, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That you're a burden on other people. How can I be such a terrible person?
Wow.
Yes. No.
Punishment. Right?
I mean, that's spot on.
Wow.
Yeah, that's spot on.
Punishment. And then did you ever tell your wife? How did that happen? What did you do? Did you say, how did that happen?
No, what's funny about the whole thing is no one really even knew until the book came out.
Wow. Mm.
And so the book comes out, and I'm getting bombarded with family members going, what in the hell?
Yeah, what happened?
We had absolutely no idea.
Because you guys learn to fake it well.
Oh, yeah, we can fake it.
You guys know how to fake it, like at a party or in a social situation. I know it. I mean, I have family members, and it's a totally, you do not know how fast those legs are swimming underneath. You fake it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jeez.
So so that happened. At that moment, did you think, I'm not supposed to die right now?
Well, yeah, like I knew that something was up. Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of where I started understanding I needed a little bit of help. Mm. Because when the bullet didn't, like when the gun didn't go, the adrenaline that I got off of it was amazing.
Whoa.
it was amazing.
For an adrenaline junkie, it was like a high.
And so it took me out of this deep, dark depression phase, right? The adrenaline hits, mm-hmm. and now I'm top of the world. And we're talking within like a 5-second period of time. And so as I'm driving down the canyon, you know, you have all this emotion. I'm having a breakdown. I'm on the phone with my doctor saying, hey, man, like, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. He's like, get down here. And so that's kind of when we started doing the research behind it. And that's when I started the medication.
Is that when you were diagnosed?
Yes.
Okay, so that was the biggest moment. That was everything.
Yeah, that was the day.
That was the catalyst.
Yeah.
Wow.
You see, that's the thing, is that you feel like you're a burden on your family. You want to... Yeah, I mean, because
it's
you also
like
feel
selfless.
Sorry for yourself.
Right, you almost feel selfless. Getting rid of yourself will help your family.
Exactly,
in some way.
That's what you're doing, but it's the worst thing you
can
do.
Right, of course.
It's so selfish when you think about it, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you don't want your kids or anybody to find you with your brains splattered all over the place.
Yeah, it's irrational.
You know?
It's irrational.
And
thought.
Your kids having to imagine that for the rest of their lives and stuff, you know?
Yep.
So, what we're here to say, Justin, is that. You got to seek help, right?
Always. You have to have a
voice.
Early
on.
Yeah, if you don't have a voice behind it, I mean, I held it in for my entire life.
Your entire life.
Yeah, and so if you have a voice, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a mental illness.
No.
I mean, we're very creative. We're very, you know, motivated. Yeah, we have bummer days, and that's just part of it. But if you don't have a voice, and if you don't get, I call it my tribe, right? My little core group of people, my support people. Mm-hmm. If I don't have my tribe hanging around me, then I find myself falling into other places.
Right.
So I've always told people, it's like, find your tribe, let them know, get that support system.
Exactly.
If you have the support system, you can pull through anything.
That's true, because nobody's going to let you fall that far or that deep before
you're not getting up that mountain and doing that, right? Exactly.
So being alone is not a good thing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we do it. It's just part of what we do.
Right.
But
what made you call the doctor on the way down? Because that's something else. You always say, you know, get help. But it's not easy for someone in that state to, like, make even just the phone call.
That's true.
Yeah, for me, it was...
you knew something.
Yeah, it was just at that point. I had a good life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was racing, and I had a wonderful family, and I had, you know, all these great things. And, you know, for that irrational thought, when the rational thinking comes, it's like, all right, what the hell's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to do something. And so I was very fortunate enough to have a doctor who was a good friend of mine. And so when I was able to talk to him, he was like, okay. Like,
let's do this.
Like, let's try something.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, there's so much more to talk about. I feel we didn't cover anything, but that's the point. A radio show is not supposed to give you the whole book, but to tease you and to get in the book. And a memoir by Justin Peck, Bulletproof. People can get it, obviously, on your website. Go to justinpeck.com. Again, what's your handle? How can people find you?
JustinPeck49 on Twitter, 49. Facebook, Instagram, whatever other ones that are out there.
Yes, contact this man. I mean, very inspirational.
So,
and we didn't even touch on so many other things, you know, but you're speaking and all that stuff. But you know what? So let's just say this. Next time you're in town, you're welcome back to come on.
Perfect.
We'll
love
continue
it.
Talking,
yeah,
you know.
Love it. Thank
Maybe
you.
It'll be another book, you know. What's in store for you now? What are you going to do now that you did the book?
You know, right now, my legacy, this is what I've realized, is I want to be the guy in 30 years that people can look back and say, he was the one that brought awareness to the illness.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah. You're doing a great
job. Because you don't expect it from a guy like you, to be honest. You don't expect you to be, A, so articulate, and B, so well open about it.
Yeah.
You expect a hard truck guy that's not going to talk about it. So if you can do it, that is for everybody.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And he seems like a tough guy.
That's what
you
mean,
know?
Right? You don't expect that.
Yeah, with
that
all the tattoos and everything, you go, he doesn't have emotional problems.
And then he's so open about it.
Right.
Right.
And then you think of Tony Soprano and you think, okay, there's another tough guy with problems.
Yeah.
So we all have problems.
I bet you anything, like all the like Batman had a therapist. I bet you anything. You know what I mean? Like they all had something. They had Alfred or whatever.
Well, I mean,
we're just human beings.
Like if you look at Robin Williams, right?
Yeah.
One of the most incredible human beings, like for me personally. No one ever knew.
No
one had any clue. And that's for that true. Man to go to that extent, it's...
And he tried it before. He'd done things before.
Exactly.
Yeah. He was always in that real deep... And
nobody
to,
knew, huh?
His
nobody
family, knew his he tried the first knew. Time?
Yeah, his family knew.
He was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and he was sober, but they didn't know the depth. And then he was diagnosed with oncoming dementia, basically. And that's when he said, I can't do this.
Yeah, anymore. I can't be a burden on my family again. Yeah. Justin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for
You're
having me.
You're an awesome person. So you're going back to Utah, or is that where you live now?
Deep breath.
Yes. Sigh. Yes.
So move away from there. Why are you staying
Come
there?
Come out
you
here.
Like it. My goal is to be out in San Diego within a year or so.
Everybody we know loves San Diego. Yeah.
San Diego's cool. Well, we wish that upon you.
Yes.
Hopefully, a lot of people will get the book and everything. And let's just start a movement. Help Justin Beck move to San Diego.
There you go.
Perfect.
There you go.
Yay.
Give our love to your family and everything, Justin.
Thank you.
The best to you. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Story.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody,
Always.
For listening.
Friday the 13th, guys.
Yes, and a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.